Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related. Hello, Rowan. How are you doing?
Hello, really well. How are you doing?
Good. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Really good. Really good. So,
what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about taming the terminal.
Ah, so, brilliant. Taming the terminal.
Taming the terminal. Yeah. So all about the Windows terminal and what you can do with it and why you want it and basically using it, setting it up and all sorts of things like that, really, and how it can help you as a dev, obviously from more of a dev point of view, but it's useful to lots of people, this. So should be useful to people.
Sounds good. Excellent. Sounds good. Let's kick off with our random fact, though, before we get into the Windows terminal.
Yeah, for sure.
Given the time of year that we're recording this, we're recording towards the end of March, early April, which is fairly close to Easter.
It is Easter, chocolate time. Chocolate time for the kids.
Absolutely. So I believe you have a very random fact about Easter for us.
I do. It's going to start off more like a joke, to be honest. So why is Easter called Easter? There's no punchline. Don't worry. So why is Easter called Easter?
I don't know. Why is Easter called Easter?
Well, Joe, it's funny. It's one of those things I never even thought about it until I came across this. And according to scholars, this Christian holiday was named after the Anglo-Saxon goddess Isatri, or Isatrur. Well, I pick these words, I cannot say them. E-O-S-T-R-E. So,
well, that sounds like Easter. There we are. Easter, okay.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, change your letters around, put an A in there, you've got Easter. So apparently... she was depicted as a fertility goddess and a goddess of dawn and light.
Oh, how about that?
So, there you go. And I guess,
very random.
Yeah, over the years, obviously, I guess it's the words changed slightly to be the Easter that we know. So there you go. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fact of the day.
Very interesting. All right. Brilliant. Well, let's move from the goddess of fertility and dawn and light onto Windows Terminal.
Exactly, seamless. What a segue!
Absolutely. So, when did Windows Terminal come out? It came out a few years ago, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
And it's been through some iterations, and it was exciting when it first arrived, but it's even more exciting now that it's been through a bit of sort of hardening and a few more features have been added. And it's a brilliant, brilliant tool. Something that you and I are both using day to day. It's certainly worthwhile. An episode on, really, just to have a look through it, have a look at the features and understand why we should be using it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things, it came about slowly. It's sort of a project that Microsoft started off, because there were lots of, I used to use quite a few, there were a few I used. I think Console 2 was a version of this, and there was another one I used to use. So there's been this sort of utility available for a while that can run multiple shells and things. And, I always used to use that. And I think I remember you started using this slightly before I did, because I was using this one previously, a different one of these. So I was quite used to that and happy with what it did.
Yeah.
And then you sort of showed me this one, and I'd heard about it, and I thought, oh, well, I'll give it a try. And at the time, just having a quick look at this, they announced it at Dev Conference May 2019. So, it's only been, 3 years? So it's not been a long time, but it sort of gained traction quite quickly, and there's a team dedicated to it, and they were releasing versions, and it used to be you download it and there was no settings UI. It was quite basic. If you wanted to tweak it, you had to jump into a JSON file and stuff like that. So but they started doing that, and it got more fully featured, so it made sense to sort of jump across to it, because it started doing all the things the other one that I used did, but it did a lot more as well. So it's just quite a nice one to get into. So that was basically it.
It's interesting touching on the point that the stock standard sort of Windows console has been around for as long as Windows. Yeah. And it's worthwhile touching on the point that Microsoft had some challenges around trying to update that or change that in any way, because over time, so many different businesses and systems have become dependent on that particular shell that, if they were to introduce changes that affected any of those, there could be some massive ramifications, couldn't there? Everything from oil rigs in the North Sea to massive financials, in big cities around the world have probably got stuff that relies on, batch files and command files. Mm-hmm. And if that functionality were to change, the ramifications could be massive. So I think Microsoft was very mindful of that, and were very careful not to make any changes to that over, you know, over its life.
Yeah.
I've introduced a brand new thing in Windows Terminal, which is brilliant, and it's got none of the limitations that the old, that the old shell's got. So
yeah, that's it. You're absolutely right. That's the trouble. They've got such a, Microsoft, like a lot of companies, got such a legacy, but they are. They're probably one of the better ones, I think. I mean, some people say it's not good. Other people say, they've got no opinion. But I personally think it's pretty good. You know, they support these things for years and years. And, yeah. They've made sure, no changes go in. And like you say, if they took it away or if they changed it in certain ways, then, there's probably people out there running DOS batch files from years ago that actually still work in the same way. It's still got all the functionality and they can still do that. And, it would cost millions, probably billions to actually rebuild these things, and some companies just can't do it. So it's good that they support it, and even better for us that they've taken this a different way, so that it's an open source thing. It's taken away from the OS and it's a separate product, which is which is really good.
Absolutely good stuff. Right, well, let's start off with some okay, I'm going to use your
go for it.
Your joke, some terminology.
Very nice.
See what I did there. just to explain what a terminal is, because we hear these terms, shells, terminals, mm-hmm. consoles. What does it all mean?
Yeah.
What is a terminal, and what's mm-hmm. some of the history behind it? Why do we call it a terminal?
Good questions. And obviously, a lot of this stuff, I don't really think about it all the time, and a lot of this stuff came from sort of the good old days when computing was in its infancy. So let's take some time to consolidate. See, there you go. I'll use your one. Consolidate our understanding of the terms.
double. Let's do it.
So it's a terminal. So I've lifted a lot of this obviously from the amazing information thing called the internet. But there's loads of stuff out there. Different people have got different takes on it, but the one I found sort of repeated quite a lot was the word terminal comes from terminate, indicating that it's the terminating end or terminal end of a communication process. So
makes sense.
The terminal, and you'll often hear like dumb terminal when you're referring to like a text-based environment where the computer you're sitting next to is just taking input and showing text, while actually that's all sent to a machine further down the line who's doing the work and then sending it back to you. So it's a dumb terminal. It's not got anything clever in it. And interestingly, things did start going back that way a little bit, where we were getting much lower powered sort of consumer devices where a lot of the work's done on the cloud, and you then get the results of it. But then moving on, so then we had a thing called a TTY or a teletypewriter, and that was the first kind of terminal. And rather than having a screen, you'd have a typewriter, basically, for the people who remember that type of thing. It was just keys and a bit of paper was what it was originally like. So people knew what a typewriter was. So you literally had a keyboard. And then when you typed on it, you're seeing the text coming out on a piece of paper and the commands being sent to a computer somewhere. So then that computer replies and then you'll see the information coming out on the paper in front of you. And you probably see these sorts of things in some of the old films. There's some old films that sort of show you this sort of stuff. And, it was a very simple way of getting information backs and forwards. And then when we refer to a terminal in the software sense, we're actually referring to a literal software version of the TTY or terminal. And that's what the Windows terminal is, basically. It's just this thing that hosts something. We'll come onto that in a second. And that information just gets sent across somewhere. You get the result of it and it shows you on the screen. So it's just really good at displaying textual output. It just takes your input, passes it on. But it's not smart. It doesn't do anything. It just takes your input, passes it on, and then it gives you back the results.
Shows you the reply.
That's it. Yeah.
Interesting. So that's the terminal.
Yeah.
We also use terms like console and shell. So if we think about console and what that might mean, mm-hmm. from what we understand, that came from from a piece of furniture that people used to have in their in their living room, called a console or a console mm-hmm. cabinet. And so a console in the context of computers, it's a console or a box or a cabinet with a screen and a keyboard inside it. Mm-hmm. But effectively, it's the same thing as a terminal. So when we talk about a console in our context, it's effectively the terminal. It's effectively that end communication point that takes your input and sends it off somewhere else and then receives the response and then shows that to you. But I guess if you want to be if you want to be specific about it, the console is the thing that wraps the terminal up and sort of holds that. But effectively, they're the same thing. Then on top of that, we talk about shells. So a shell is the actual program that the terminal sends the user input to. So the terminal is the dumb thing. It accepts your user input and it sends it off somewhere. The shell is the thing that it sends it off to.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yep. And that's the benefit of having this Windows terminal is you've got the option of many shells.
Many different shells, yeah. So the shell will receive your commands. It'll do something and then it'll generate some output and pass it back to the terminal. And then the terminal will display that output. So I think we're all fairly familiar with lots of examples of shells. So, you know, things like Bash and PowerShell and CMD are all examples of shells, even like you know, SSH. There's loads of them, you know, TSCH. The list goes on and on. But I guess the point is that the Windows terminal allows you to set it up with any number of different shells. They are available in either a tabbed or through a tabbed UI, but you can then set those individual tabs up with split screens horizontally and vertically and set up icons and all sorts of different stuff. So, it's worthwhile just getting straight what those terms are. So largely we've got a terminal or a console, and within that terminal, i.e., the thing that we're talking about, you know, the Windows terminal, you set up multiple shells.
Correct shells. That's right. So hopefully that probably made no sense whatsoever. No, that's fine.
Glad we went over that then.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, like a lot of things in computing and with this stuff, it really doesn't matter. You start the Windows terminal, you get a default and you can add to it basically. So, cool. So the features of it, you've touched on a couple of them. You mentioned like tabbed UI. That's probably one of the biggest things that sort of makes it different to the old DOS style prompt or command prompt, because obviously you used to have those in separate windows, whereas now you can have a tabbed version of it. And obviously that's the way everything goes. You get tabbed browsers, tabbed file systems and stuff like that, file explorers. So
I was just going to say, just before we jump into too many features, where do we get it? How do we get
good point. Yeah, you probably want it first, don't you? Absolutely. So yeah, to actually go and get this, the easiest way is just Windows Store. Obviously, Microsoft put this on the store to make it easy to install. And if you get it from there, you're going to get the auto updates. If you want to be cutting edge, you could always go to their GitHub repo, which we'll mention later on. And you could grab the sort of current version of it, which might be a slightly early version, just to allow you to test new features or try things out. I've got it installed from the Windows Store. Because to be honest, I find that a lot of it comes out fairly quickly anyway.
There's not a huge
amount that doesn't sort of come out for a while. So you can just grab it from there.
Cool, excellent. That's the easiest version. And the advantage of doing that, as you say, is that you get the thing auto updates as they release new versions. So that's worthwhile doing. Cool. Absolutely. Sorry, back to the features. So you mentioned tabbed UI, which is really good. And then you started talking about arranging the windows. So how can you arrange the windows?
Yeah, so the nice thing about it is if you've got you might have multiple tabs, which is great, and you're flicking between them to do various things, but obviously what you might be wanting to do is actually see the same sort of views in one screen. So what you can do is you can actually split your window pretty much any way you want. It's very, very powerful. You can split it horizontally, vertically, and if you take one window and obviously split it horizontally, you get two. Then if you split that one vertically, you've now got the three, and then you could split another one in a different way. So each window you're basically splitting into two as you go, so you can break it up as much as you want and then load separate shells into each one. So into each little pane. So you could be doing things on PowerShell, you could be doing things in a command prompt, you could be using Git Bash, and all of these things would be visible. So you could actually fire off one command and it's monitoring something, so you could be tailing a file or you could be remotely monitoring something. And then in the other pane, you could be doing your standard commands, but you can obviously then see the output straight away as well. So it's quite a nice way of setting up things, especially for a developer where you might want to have three or four windows open to do different things. So you might be, monitoring files and rebuilding projects in one pane. You might be checking out files in another pane, or you know, creating branches, or moving files around, or something like that. So it's a really powerful way of actually setting up your environment and using it.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Well, one thing I've used the split pane for is in a microservice context. So you mentioned, you know, tailing a log file. If you've got a local setup where you've got a handful of microservices and you want to see them all operating at once, or something like, you know, in service bus where you've got loads of different endpoints. You know, you can stick them all in the same window and tail all the logs and have them, you know, displaying all at once. Makes it really easy to troubleshoot and diagnose sort of behaviors.
Yeah, it's really useful stuff like that. Absolutely. Yeah, that's really nice. But I mean, one thing you will get with that is obviously you've got all these windows open, and it can become a bit confusing as to what's what, and you know, which is a PowerShell window, which is a Bash window. You know, if you use them a long time, you can probably tell, because you know they do have slightly different sort of characteristics to them. But you know, if you've got two PowerShell window, you might want to see that which is which at a glance, and you can actually add background images to each pane, which is really nice. So yeah, you can set up these shells in a particular way and say, you know, when I'm in a PowerShell one, then display a little PowerShell logo. If I'm in Ubuntu, you know, so you could have different flavors of Linux, and you want to see which one you're in, so you could set up an Ubuntu image in the bottom right or in the top corners, wherever you want to put it, and then obviously at a glance you can tell exactly which is quite nice. So it's just a nice little tweak you can make to it.
That's really good. So I remember with the first versions, and we mentioned this before, setting up all of this stuff, setting up your new bashes, and even setting an icon in the tab. Any of the settings had to be done through the config file, which was okay. But they've released some updates recently, which allow you to change the settings to a UI, haven't they?
That's right, yeah. So there wasn't a UI for a long, long time. And it was sort of, I think it was just low down on their priority list because, you know, the features, really in a way, a config UI is really nice, settings UI, really nice. But I suppose saying it doesn't add anything is a bit unfair. It does add something because you can obviously control it through it. But it's functionality-wise, it's not really giving you as much as, right, we want these terminal windows to work like this, or we want to be able to split them, or you know, we want to be able to do this or that. So yeah, that sort of didn't come for a little while, and you just basically edited a JSON file to like you say, to do things like adding a different shell. You went and added it as a section, and then you could set all the properties up for it and various things like that. So it was okay to do it, but it was a bit time consuming, and you could get it wrong. It's like anything, you edit the file manually, you could get it wrong. So they introduced the UI to allow you to set all this stuff up, and it's a lot simpler now. It's good. You can still use the JSON file sometimes for things that haven't yet been added to the UI. There might be various things that come in that they're not mainstream yet, but you can add them and give them a go if you want. So yeah, you can do it through that. And it discovers a lot of this stuff. When you first install it, you should find it also discovers most of your shells that you've got installed, and it'll set them up for you, so they're ready to go just from a drop down menu, which is quite nice.
Marvelous. Mm. Yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
And you know, it's worthwhile mentioning that they're constantly iterating on this. And you mentioned it's all open source, you know, it's all up in a GitHub repo. But they do take feedback and comments. And you can see, I can see in the latest release notes that, you know, they've tweaked a whole load of things that they've had feedback on. So they're actively developing it. And it's just going to continue to improve.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you set up your terminal then? What do you have running day to day? And what sorts of sort of productivity hacks have you put in?
Yeah, cool. So obviously a lot of these things, been doing development and being on various projects, it's nice to have these terminal windows because you can obviously set them up in a certain way and they're always there. They're always in the same look. And you can, you know, UI is good for a lot of things, but sometimes it's quick and easy just to use a command line to do things. So I generally set mine up on a new machine or something in the same way so that I can just get using it quickly. And I generally use PowerShell. I used to use command line a lot, and PowerShell came along and it was slightly better, had some more features and still supported a lot of the old stuff. So I carried on using that. Whereas I think you use Git Bash more.
I use a Git Bash. I sort of sit in that all day long. But, you know, essentially they're both shells, aren't they? They're just two command line shells, and you get used to what you get used to. And, you know, as long as you can make your day productive and whatever makes you happy, then, you know, that's great. Yeah. The great thing is Windows Terminal supports both of them and allows you to to be productive with, you know, with both those different bashes.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, so I basically got my setup. So I set my PowerShell up. I generally use, there's a couple of things I put in it. There's a thing called OhMyPosh, which is basically a prompt theme engine for any shell. So it doesn't, again, it doesn't have to just be PowerShell. You could do this, I guess, on Git Bash if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And you'd get a very similar look and feel.
Yeah.
But it basically just gives you a really nice prompt that you can configure to show you certain bits of information.
Yeah.
And it does a few other things as well, but I generally use it to give me a nice prompt, which basically tells me things like the folder that I'm currently in, which you normally get anyway, but it just highlights it in a nice way.
Yeah.
It tells me the branch I'm in for Git. And also because I work more in sort of the .NET world, tells me the .NET SDK that's active in the repo that I'm in, because obviously you could be using different versions of the .NET SDK. And I think my one, I've got it set up. I work a lot. There's a few old projects that I use which have got sort of version 3. So I think I've defaulted that one just so it works across them all. And then I've got some other repos that are on 5 or 6. And I then basically have that to just tell me which version it is so I can see it at a glance. And then just the final thing I have on mine is just a little indicator that shows me whether the last command was successful. So it just shows as red or green, depending on the last command that was executed. And so you can see it quickly that it worked or failed. And those are little things called segments. And there's absolutely loads of them that you can go and grab. All the different platforms support them. I know I watched a video the other day of somebody had actually written, he went through with the guy who writes this, and he built one. They built one between them, and it was to monitor glucose levels because he's diabetic.
Right.
And it was basically his information was going up to an API service, and then they were pulling that information down, and it could monitor it in nearly real time. It was updating every few seconds, and it showed him on his command line what his sugar levels were, which was quite impressive use
that's,
of it. So
that's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. So the real value here is you can set up in your command prompt basically a summary of whatever information you want. And you know, in a Git context, it's brilliant. Yeah, you've got your folder, you've got your branch information, what branch you're currently on, you know, commit information or working tree information. It's brilliant that you've got the .NET version and information around your last command. But it's all flexible, isn't it?
That's right.
All configurable. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Just however you want to set it up. So, you know, everybody's different. So you just set it out the way you want it, which is really nice. So, yeah, just got mine. Mine's a fairly common one. I sort of borrowed from some of the other themes that were there, and I just tweaked it a little bit. So it's fairly standard. So one thing that goes with that is when you do it, because you've now got this nice sort of prompt, you can add GIFs, so little images, to actually be a bit more visual. So something, you know, a folder icon or... For Git, like a branching icon, or you know, something that indicates that you've got things to push or pull, and even with the .NET SDK, there's a little symbol of the Visual Studio logo that you can include in there as well, just to make you remember what it is.
Isn't that incredible? Because if we think back to the old days of the, you know, the old DOS prompts, you know, thinking about image display in glyphs was just like, you know, there's no hope of doing that. So how do you make that work? Do you have to install anything in particular to be able to show, you know, that glyph information in a command prompt?
Yeah, so it's fairly simple. Basically, it's a font that just supports them. So it's a font with these things built in. So because this is a new Windows terminal, obviously they've got the technology behind it. They can use fonts, just standard Windows fonts.
Yeah.
And you can go and grab any of these. There's quite a few out there. I use a font called Cascadia, which is a Microsoft one.
Yeah.
But there's loads. If you look on nerdfonts.com, you can do programmingfonts.org, and you can find them there. And basically, if you just add that to Windows, and then you can configure the OhMyPosh to use that font, and then magically all of these glyphs just start appearing.
That's
because at the end of the day, they're just characters that you type out, and obviously you put them into your format, and they come through. So it's really nice.
Really good.
Very easy to do that. And they also support ligatures. So as well as glyphs, some of these things have ligatures. So you can get you can use these fonts in things like VS Code as well. And then you get the programming ligatures. So, you know, if you don't want, you know, exclamation equals, that'll get replaced with, I think, an equals with a slash through it. Not equal to.
Like
that. So there's various things like that come with it. So you can use those as well if you want. But yeah, for mainly for the OhMyPosh, it's the images that come with it, which is nice.
Very useful. Excellent. Yeah. So there's OhMyPosh. I mean, one of the big time-saving things when you're working with a command line is things like shortcuts and aliases and and you know repetitive tasks, having some sort of automated way of not having to repeat that task. So what sorts of things do you do to sort of solve that?
Yeah, so with things like that, there's loads and loads of things you can do. So there's some shortcuts, a few things I've learned recently actually when I was researching this, and I've watched setting up things. I've never used various utilities, obviously with the internet there's millions of these things out there now, but some start cropping up, and there's certain built-in things you can do. I mean, I'd never use things like push D and pop D to go between directories. I don't know if you've used those before, but
those types of utilities are built into things like the Git bash, and those are the things that I love because they're all time saving once you're aware of them, and once you know how to use them they're time saving little nuggets. Mm-hmm. so those sorts of things are brilliant.
It's really nice. So like you say, you get some of those built in and they're available, but of course they would be only in certain shells, but there are some of these utilities that you can basically install, and they're available cross shell. So you know, if you get used to them in one, you're going to have them on the other. And something I use is a thing called Zed. And that's it's a PowerShell version of it, but you can get a version for bash, and it just lets you navigate the file system based on your command history. So you can quite easily just do Zed and then start typing something, and then it will complete it for you basically. So you know, you might be working on a project called Ghostbuster, and if you just literally do Z space ghost, it will take you to the actual folder that's got ghost in it, because it remembers it from your command history. So you know, if you're flipping between different projects, you can get to them really quickly with these things, which is quite nice.
Very useful.
And you can set this, like I said, you set it up, so if you do run PowerShell and bash, you could have the same thing on both, so you get used to using it across all of them, which is quite nice.
Marvelous.
Stuff like that. And you can one thing about the terminal, you can use command line options when you actually fire it up as well, so you could always fire it up and get it in the same configuration. You don't have to put it into the same config every time you reboot your machine, so you could do that to save some time, which would be quite easy.
Go on.
I was just going to say, with things like that, when I'm setting these things up, if I do have to configure things like that and set them up, I generally try and put them into something like Dropbox or OneDrive. And then obviously that's synced up, and things like background images as well, rather than just having them locally. If I put them into a folder on an online service, they're synced across machines. So, you know, I might have a desktop machine I'm doing this on and also a laptop. So rather than having to redo it all the time, copy files across, it will do it for me, and I'll just pick them up from there, which is quite a nice little shortcut.
Brilliant. So that's the key, isn't it? It's the settings files, because lots of these shortcuts obviously exist in the settings file. You know, the Windows terminal's got its settings file, which is basically what drives all the configuration. Yeah. Although, as we've mentioned, they've got a user interface that sits over the top of that now, but it still saves to that settings file, doesn't it? So that's a really good tip, actually, sort of centralizing your settings files. So across machines, you can access the same settings files. So, you know, thinking about settings files, let's have a think about things like aliases, because Git obviously allows you to create aliases, and it's got a settings file or a config file with its, you know, with its Git config file. What sorts of aliases do you tend to use?
Yeah, it's a good point. So it's one of those funny things when you start using Git. Obviously, you don't know about these things. You've learned it. You type out the command. So a lot of people, you know, Git status or Git checkout or Git checkout -B, things like this. And you do that all the time. And then, you know, hopefully somebody on your team will come across and go, "Have you heard of aliases?" And you're like, "Nope, what are they?" And it's literally an alias for a Git command. So you might put in the Git config file. Again, if you've never changed anything, you wouldn't even be aware there was a Git config file, because when you set Git up and you tell it things like your username and your email address, it puts all these things in the Git config file. And then, just as a section in the Git config file, you've got an alias section, which allows you to basically take the shortcut you'd like. So one of the ones I use is ST for status. So I basically put a ST equals status in my alias section in my Git config file. And then when I type Git ST, that just expands to the word status and executes Git status for me. So what am I saving there? Four letters every time I type it.
Makes a difference, like, though, if you're doing that, that multiple times a day, it all adds up, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it does. Absolutely. You do that all the time. And I mean, I do that. I do checkout. So, I mean, checkout's even longer, and I shortcut that to CO.
Yeah.
Checkout -B to actually check out a branch is COB, COB.
Yeah.
And so I can just shortcut that. And then I even checkout main, COM. I've shortcutted it to that. So obviously The flip side to this is you start using these things and you then forget to use how to use the other ones.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You
know, yeah.
When you come to another platform or somebody else's machine, you do Git ST and they haven't set it up that way. That's always fun. But so you can create as many of these as you want. There's if you go and Google it, it's great. There's so many people that have created these. There's some fantastic ones.
Absolutely. So there's brilliant ones for things like displaying the Git log, because there are so many different options in terms of showing the log, and there's some really well-known ones around showing, you know, tree views, you know, in ASCII art sort of style of logs, you know, showing branches and merge commits and all of that sort of stuff. So it's really useful stuff.
It is. They're really simple to set up. Yeah, it's just editing a text file, so it's really easy to set up, and they're, you know, easy to take off as well. So.
And I use the same idea in my Git bash, but rather than setting up Git aliases, I just set up bash aliases. So I don't have to type Git space, you know, ST, for example. I set up an alias for ST, which basically runs the command of Git space status. So
nice. So it's even less.
It's even less, And things like, you know, just a dot dot for CD space dot dot to, you know, to go back up the directory and that sort of stuff. Similar sorts of ideas. And these are all just suggestions and things that, you know, that work for you and I. But, you know, if you're doing stuff over and over and over all day, every day, the quicker and easier you can make it, the more, you know, the less tired you'll feel at the end of the day and the more productive you're going to be. So
that's right.
It's all worthwhile. So
it is. It's interesting. On the bash aliases, you saying that, there's something else I was going to mention about functions in PowerShell. It's a really similar thing, actually. And interestingly, I haven't used it for that so much. For some reason, I still use Git. ST. It's one of those weird things. You just get used to something and you carry on doing it that way. So I still do Git ST, Git CO for all of those. But I had actually created shortcuts recently. The best one I created years and years ago is somehow I always type GTI. I don't know whether I'm just trying to go for
faster
speed or something. So, you know, I mistype Git. But actually what I can do is in PowerShell, I can create an alias for GTI to mean Git. And that way, even if I mistype it, it still works.
If you screw it up, it still works. Yeah, brilliant.
So that's quite cool. And when you get into the side of PowerShell functions, it's huge. You know, you can then create similar functions to what Git Bash has got. You know, things like touch, if you want to create a file just on the command line, you create things like that. So it's got a similar thing. I should investigate more, actually, because I should stop typing Git. I don't need that, really. I just get rid of it. So. Get rid of it.
There we are.
Indeed. So, I was going to say Scott Hanselman has got loads of good videos for setting up, and probably most .NET developers listening to this would know who Scott Hanselman is if you just Google him. Yeah. He's got a load of YouTube videos on it. He's got on his website. He's got it, but he's got some really good ones. He covers all of this stuff. Most of the stuff I've set up originally came from things he's done. He sort of put me onto it. So he's got great videos telling you where to do these things and how to do them. So. You know, you should be able to set them up quite easily. That's pretty much all I've got for the sort of shortcut side of things. And I'm sure there's loads more of them that you could do, but that gets me through day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny as developers, and Hanselman talks about it quite often, that, you know, if you find yourself doing a repetitive task, really you should automate that. And as developers, that's really how we think, isn't it? You know, we're developing stuff, we're developing software that essentially automates workflows. So, you know, why shouldn't we automate our own you know, workflows day to day?
Definitely.
And these sorts of tools just make that possible. So it's really good.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, Windows Terminal available through the Windows Store, but it's open sourced up on GitHub. So it's github.com/Microsoft/terminal is where their repo lives.
Yeah.
And they've got release notes and all the source and everything you need, really, if you want to sort of delve into it and have a look at what's going on. It's worth a look. They're very actively developing it. There's an active community around it. They release notes after every release, so worth a look.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's worth going and having a look. I was just having a quick look through the source code while you were talking, actually, and sort of seeing all the bits they've got on there. So there's lots of C++ files and loads of different folders you can go and have a look at and see what they're doing, how they're doing it. Just, you know, from a interesting point of view, really.
Yeah, marvellous. Excellent. Okay. Brilliant. Well, I think it's about time for our OS utility of the week or project of the week. What have we got this week?
So obviously the obvious one this week would have been Windows Terminal.
Windows Terminal.
Yeah. But we did we've used that already, so we've had that one. That was in episode 6, The Wheels on the Service Bus. So
yes.
If people want to go back and listen to that, we sort of talk about a little bit about Windows Terminal, what it's got on that one. But yeah, so I dug out another one, and another one sort of linked back into the time saving bit. There's a free product or free utility I use called Auto Hotkey. And it's basically just an open source scripting language for Windows. So yeah, I think it's only Windows. I think there might be other versions of this on other platforms, but the one I'm looking at is a Windows one that I use. So you can basically create small or even complex scripts. It's up to you. A lot of the ones I create are quite small and to focus on something, but basically just it automates something, you know, as you were saying about automating things. This just automates something you do repetitively. So, you know, if there's something, an example I've got is auto-completing my email address. I can just put in, I think, 2 or 3 characters, and that auto-expands out to my whole email address, so I haven't got to type it out every time.
Yeah.
And then things like, you know, querying stuff. I spend a lot of time in SQL, so I've got a shortcut that does select star from, because you type it all the time. So
yeah, you're 3 characters all day, yeah. Every day. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So you do things like that with it, but it's huge. You can do fill-in forms. You can do auto-clicking. You can create these macros. I think you can then turn them into actual standalone programs as well. So it's quite powerful and worth a look if you want to automate some things.
Very useful. Very so useful. That's yeah. AutoKey at autokey.com. Yeah, marvellous.
Auto Hotkey.
Auto Hotkey. Sorry, Auto Hotkey.
Yeah, so, auto key. You might get a completely different thing if you go AutoKey. Yeah. Replacement keys auto-key. For your car.
AutoHotkey.com. There we are.
Perfect. No, great. Very good.
Excellent. Well, that was really useful. Always good to go through and talk about time saving and productivity tips. Yeah. And Windows Terminal certainly allows you to, you know, to set up whatever you need with multiple shells, split screens, tabbed UIs, great text and image support in a terminal. So it's great to learn about what terminals are and what's available. So yeah, there we are.
Absolutely. Brilliant. No, good. Yep. Yeah, useful as ever. Appreciate that.
Good. Good. Well, till next time, we shall, we'll catch up then.
Yep. Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Ron. Speak to you later.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.